So it comes to not quite our last speaker. We have an additional 5 minute item after this, just to warn you. So, with admirable efficiency, Adam Harvey has given me the blurb from his book, The Temple Architecture of India. And while they're setting up, I'll read it out. He's been studying the architecture of Indian temples for 25 years. The subject was the focus of his doctoral thesis and other publications. Since studying architecture at Cambridge, he's practiced as an architect, including involvement in the design of several Hindu temples in the UK and held several academic posts. He's professor of South Asian art and architecture in Leicester. He founded the research group Prasada, devoted to the architecture and visual arts of South Asia and diaspora, and the group is now based at the Welsh School of Architecture at Cardiff University, where he is a reader. Currently, he is leading a large research project funded by the AHRC, focusing on the unfinished 11th century temple at Bhojpur, and he's the editor of the journal South Asian Studies. Deserves to be read out for the efficiency of providing it.
And I recommend the book too, and you can get it. There's a cheap offer, a little blue sticker, you get 20% off. One good thing about the blurb was that it ended with an introduction to the project that I'm going to talk about. I'm very sorry this is not a neurotic paper to be the last but one, except in as much as there's no interpretation, at least on my part, not yet. You'll be glad to hear it's not a paper. The abstract in the book, the booklet, is the abstract of my paper, which is sort of a paper, and that's tomorrow. And this is in place of Michael Willis's paper, because Michael couldn't be here, and because Michael and I are two of the three main investigators of this AHRB vastly funded project focusing on Bhojpur. Himanshu kindly asked me to tell you something about the project, because it's the biggest funded project on temples in this country going on at the moment. It's based at Cardiff, which is off the map. It's in collaboration with the British Museum, Michael Willis, and with SOAS, Dawood Ali. The title of the project is The Indian Temple Production, Place and Patronage. And it's, as you can gather from the characters involved, it's interdisciplinary, and I think I've read this sort of thing in the blurb for this conference. It's trying to bridge the barriers between the disciplines and forge a new paradigm in the which we'll all do together. You know? I'm the production one, which is why there's no interpretation. I'm looking at how temples were designed and built. Michael Willis is looking at doing a study of the topography. And along with Anne Cazil, who's the research assistant on the project, employed by Cardiff, working at the British Museum, and they're focusing on the distribution of temples during the Parmara period. The whole project is focused on Bhojpur, the temple there, which I'll come to. And so far, they've taken in two districts, Raisen district and one other. And on the basis of copious documents from the State Archaeological Department, they've got this GIS system. These aren't just maps. This is a GIS system, and they've located the sites on the maps. And this is going to be, it's all in a computer. It's going to be interactive, and you're going to be able to press a little button, and everything about the site will come out, and all these typed up notes, you know, from these which have been mouldering on a shelf in O.P. Mishra's office will all be revealed in these dots, and maybe there are going to be pictures, and you can interrogate it. It's an interactive interrogatory software where you can ask it anything you like. And from all this, Michael is going to deduce the role of the temple in state formation in the 11th century. the temple in the medieval polity. Dawood Ali, more of those. Dawood Ali is he's the text bit. Dawood has located some texts and inscriptions, and he's looking at the role of patronage, the ideal of kingship, of the king as a patron of the arts, this ideal of the king of as a polymath and patron of letters. And why is Bhojpur suitable, a good focus for the Indian temple? Well, because you have this coincidence of the temple, which I'll come to presently, the king to whom it is ascribed, King Bhoja, who ruled from about 1000 to 1055, and a text, the Samarangana Sutradhara, which is also, like the temple, ascribed to King Bhoja. And the other research assistant on the project, Salvini, this person, Matteo Salvini, who's Italian, and because he is French and he was very international. Yeah, he's based in Kathmandu but employed by SOAS. And he's translating the Samarangana Sutradhara. And I believe, the first complete translation. So from my point of view, architectural point of view, I should, of course, be capitulating and looking at the text and seeing if I can make anything out of the text. But my main job is starting from Bhojpur and then going outward. I can look at any temple I want, really, because the research question is that I'm... my part of the project is looking at is the construction, and focusing on the construction. And what you have at this temple of Bhojpur is a unique set of architectural drawings on the rocks, which in the first fieldwork visit earlier this year I've drawn and documented. There is a project student, Doria Tishit, who is here, who's studying the Udayeshwara temple, the most famous and most beautiful Paramara temple, which of course we can make comparisons. She's looking at the iconography, and honorary project student, not directly employed by the project, but funded by the project, but connected, Fiona Bucky, who is also here, is looking at Temple 45 at Sanchi, so it's the same region and slightly earlier, and it's all connected. So, to come to the site, I'll just tell you a little bit about the field work we did this year, the drawings, and some of the questions that arise from it. There was this enormous dam. I mean, you know how you have a little temple and a little tank. Well, here you have a huge, huge, huge megalomaniac. Unfinished, so megalomaniac they could never have finished it, I don't think, even if they wanted to, and an enormous tank, enormous dam, which created a huge lake. And when the dam was finally broken, the local ecology changed, such was the effect of this enormous tank, which of course provided, you know, for the agriculture of the area, which fed the army and fed the dynastic ambitions of the Paramaras, as well as the fed people and so on. This is the site. You've got a bare hillside of rock, which was... what's unique about this temple is that you have the quarry next to the temple, you have the unfinished temple, and you have these drawings on the site. And the temple, you see, it's not a finished structure. It's a lump, an enormous sanctum. There are some drawings, but we've checked the measurements and hope to produce some better drawings. That's British Standard administrator giving scale. So you see an enormous linga, and the interior is not just a square. I mean, it's so big you need additional pillars to span the width of the sanctum. It's generally assumed that it was to have been a farmsana type of shrine, that is, with a pyramid of tiered roofs, which it could well have been, or it could have been the basis of an enormous Bhumija temple. I'll show you what that, you know, for those who don't know what a Bhumija temple is, I'll show you in a moment. But if that was the intention, and certainly the scale of these mouldings makes it quite possible, very likely, in fact, that if that was just the inside and then it was going to be a Sandhara temple with an ambulatory around it, huge, great, thick walls, mouldings this size, it would have been, you know, rivaled the Brihadeshvara at Tanjore, if not been bigger still. But when we got to the site, it seemed that the best way to document the drawings was you couldn't see much if you took photographs. So yours truly knelt down in the baking sun and sketched all the drawings. And then the group, mainly architecture students from the School of Architecture in Ranchi, put the measurements on. And at the moment we're digitising them and putting them all to scale. And what I just want to show you quickly for the remainder of the talk is the sort of different types of drawing you see and what we might learn from them. It's not entirely clear whether these are the working drawings for this particular temple, and I don't think they are simply that, because there's too much variety. There were other small temples around the site, there are the remains of some, so they could have been for those, or they could be just exploring basic principles. It could be a kind of school of architecture where they're showing people how to do it. Whatever it is, you don't find this such a copious set of drawings anywhere else, and they have a certain beauty in the drawings themselves, in the clarity of line. Now, I said that perhaps the temple might have been an enormous Bhumija temple. Bhumija, the Bhumija type, or the Bhumija mode of Nagara temple, appears in the 11th century. And like the other later composite Nagara mode, the Shekari, you can see clearly how it derives from the single mono-spired Latina. In the case of the Shekari, we'll have more of those that tomorrow. It's more dynamic. It's like that. In the case of the Bhumija, like that. Both of them, you need to see the component, the elements to appreciate the compositional structure. The Kuta Stamba, the little Shikara on top of a pillar, is a basic component of both of those. But what we see is not anything so fancy as that. There's this enormous great sanctum, some later structures in front, and the platform. These are Kuta Stambas. This one's the Kandariya Mahadeva. This is Asoda, 12th century temple in Gujarat. This is actually at Sinnar in Maharashtra. But this is typical of the style that you get in Bhumija temples. Now, Bhumija is not a style, it's a mode. If the Nagara is a language, if you like, it's the kit of parts. You can put it together in different ways, Shekari, Bhumija. So Bhumija is a mode, it's a particular way of putting these parts together. But there is also a style, in the sense of what makes you recognise it as the work of a particular group of people, you know, a regional idiom, if you like, or style. And that has a particular character which doesn't show the same continuity as Shekari temples in central India, which seem to grow more out of the Pratihara temples, you know, things that were going on in that region before. It's almost as if the Paramaras invented it, but they were wanting to make, in choosing that mode of temple, and also getting in the fact that the style changes seems to suggest they brought craftsman from somewhere else, and it's got a kind of, I won't go into it, a kind of Deccan-y character, which suggests there were certainly were links with Maharashtra and northern Karnataka. So both in the type of temple and the fact they seem to be bringing other people, and maybe at Bhojpur even working out, because that's early for this Bhumija style, it's maybe they were even working out subtleties of shape and detail, because it has this very curvaceous character with big flourishes, and it's quite dry, and but it's got a certain beauty in its crispness and definition. If we look closely at the kutas, the little shikaras in Bhumija temples, they're not Latina, they're not a typical Latina. They're actually themselves composite. They're little Bhumija temples, actually, but they're not made out of little Latina shikaras. They're made out of this thing, which I think is what the text meant when they talked about the Dravida Karma Kuta. So it had these southern connotations. A Bhumija temple can be orthogonal, like that. They all have at the centre what is a special type of Vallabhi shrine. It's an archetypal thing to do, to project one type of temple out of another, and that's what they do. You can see we measured a few temples to compare with the drawings. Or they can, all Bhumija temples can be stellate. And the Udayeshvara temple is the most famous and best preserved of the stellate ones. That's got 32 points to its turn square star. And because it's a very good example, we've done some measurements of that, so that we can compare proportions, for example, with the proportions in the drawings. And in a drawing you can get proportions very, very well. There's a beautiful, you can see why photos aren't much use, but that's right in front of the door to the sanctum. They had this group of architect students, I'd say, because I thought I'd better tell them about the site, because we want to know what we're doing. And I said, there are all these drawings around on the rocks. Or you can see the ASI have put enclosures around them, and they're very interesting. And I looked down, and about the most interesting drawing is right outside the door, and I was standing on it. And it's a complete elevation of an orthogonal Bhumija shikara, which we've measured in detail, and perhaps we'll learn something about just the proportional system, and perhaps even the reka or the curvature. Gavakshas, the horseshoe arch motif. This is one indication of the way that this particular tradition, which manifests itself in Bhumija type shrines, was trying to distinguish itself from the traditions which had been there in that region up till then. And the way, it's just little details tell you that. For example, their choice of Gavaksha. This is what I call a standard mainstream Gavaksha, which if you can trace back to 7th century early Nagara, and then it gets transformed, but it's spread out and it becomes like this by the 11th century, but you find it over a very wide area, and they use it consciously as a first class one together with this, which is a second class one, but these Bhumija, you can see them used together there, these Bhumija people, they choose that as their first class one in surface and linear forms, and they also have this sort of Deccan-y onion-shaped ones for the big Mahanasis at the base of the spines. And there you see the more typically central and western Indian type of thing that you've got by the 11th century, with this type of motif and combination into a jala that you get with these Bhumija people. And you find many at Bhojpur and other sites around, you find large numbers of fragments of these things. And you could see, not in the shape of the mouldings, but little hallmarks that they decide to choose from the vast repertory of Nagara forms. They pick on this people leaf or moonstone motif, and they put it on the chests of their pillars, as if to say, "This is where we did this." And at the Udayeshvara, you see the consciousness of these different forms. You see the three of those ones that I've just mentioned, used side by side as pediments to the niches in the base. On the rocks at Bhojpur, there's a lot to learn about plans, and we've drawn and measured all these. They're sort of not exactly full size, but they're not. These plans are, they could be the plans of small temples, but they're not. They're drawings, but they're quite big. They cover sort of half this floor. So maybe we can learn about measurement and proportion. Certainly, you can learn about the system of stellate plans, because there's one plan which would be typical for a 16-point stellate turned square Bhumija temple, beautifully clearly preserved at Bhojpur on the rocks. There's a little analysis. I said there was no analysis, formal analysis of the turned square. And this is what people always miss with these, both with the stellate and the ones like the Kandariya, which go like that. They miss these little bits, the re-entrant projections between two Kuta stambas. You've got a little point which is a mostly embedded, just a little bit peeping out tip Kuta stamba, which geometrically in a stellate plan is based on. It can be a 60-degree triangle, or there are different ways of doing that. That's just, there are two ways of doing those re-entrants. And we can learn about mandapa's design. By the 11th century, you've progressed from the simple Famsana form for a typical Nagara mandapa to this composite form called Samvarana. This is more the Khajuraho type, and this is a drawing at Bhojpur showing that. This is Samvarana. Relatively, once you understand it, the principle isn't too difficult, but it looks quite complicated. You have that type at the Udayeshvara, and usually throughout central and western India, the kutas, the miniature Famsana, the miniature Samvaranas which make up the composite one, look like this, with a turn and a blur and a blur and a blur. Lots of little ones of those, like that. But you also find these Dravida karmas, or a version of that with an amalaka on the top, and you see they've got this hallmark moonstone thing. You find fragments of those which seem to have been in mandapas, and certainly in the Bhojpur drawings, it's a version of that you see. And I think from these drawings, this is one I had to do in bits, but I know how they fit together. And I think we can do a three-dimensional drawing of a Samvarana mandapa that they had in mind. In fact, there were two or three different designs, and there are no surviving examples of this particular type, so we can sort of recreate a type of mandapa that we can't see in real life. And there are fragments at Bhojpur which have a composite kuta, a typical thing. Everything, the whole thing gets composite, and when you're tired of that, you make the parts composite, and that's what they do here. And just at Bhojpur, and also at the Bija Mandal, which is another ruined enormous Paramara temple in Vidisha, you find the same kind of pavilion. Pillars, well, the drawings, there are lots and lots of drawings of pillars on these rocks. They are not the type of pillar that you find in central India predominantly, with the Purnakata, and they start piling up these elements and putting them in different combinations. But it's not that type. It's this type which started in the Deccan in the rock cut temples, became the standard Dravida pillar type, and is also, that's the type that these Bhumija temples prefer. It's got that, and then it's got a defined set of parts which all have names, and those you find, there must be about 20 drawings of those at Bhojpur. And so if we're interested in the proportional system, if there is one, we're to compare the drawings with built examples, we've measured various pillars in various temples. And of course there are mouldings, not only drawings of mouldings, but carved mouldings. Cyclopean. What's a good Indian? Big, very big scale mouldings of different sorts lying around. Not enough to be in the process of construction. More as if they're trying things out and making templates or. This is that other big temple, the Bija Mandal at Vidisha, which is enormous enough, but compared with that, the mouldings at Bhojpur are huge. I mean, you know, this thing, which in a nice little temple will be like that, in at Bhojpur it's like that. So you know, if they were really going to build a tower, it was huge.
That's 5 minutes, please.
Nearly finished. So measured some mouldings. And there's a drawing on the rock of one of these door sills, Chandrashila, is it? And finally, there are fragments of ceiling. And in a study of how temples were constructed in this period, the most intricate and geometrically interesting kind of construction is the large corbelled domes of these cusped ceilings. So we're starting on a study of those. These are at Udaipur. You've got the old lantern ceiling type and the larger corbelled domed cusped one. And you have this one, which is. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you for that paper with most expressive hand gestures. just one question.
Okay. Are there inscriptions along with the drawings, or are they just drawings?
Just drawings.
There's nothing, yeah. No words.
No words. No.
Thank you. We have one more contribution. Thank you very much. Thank you. The last piece is a short paper in absentia by Dr. Kumud Kanitkar on Ambarnatha Temple and the ritual scenes and Vastu texts depicted in sculpture. Dr. Desai, can you read it for us?
This paper is on the website. Dr. Kumud Kanitkar has sent this, but she could not, she is not present here. So she gave me just one page, which I am reading out. It is from the Ambarnath temple, the Bhumija temple, but I am not referring to any architecture. She is referring to the sculptural panels, which are based on the Vastu texts, which are depicted on this 11th century Ambarnath temple. I am just reading out what she has given me. construction of a temple involved many non-architectural components, namely rituals to be performed during construction. Medieval Vastu Shastras and religious texts of India describe a set of rituals to be performed at the beginning, during various stages of construction, and on completion of a temple. The increasing complexity of temple architecture may have necessitated performing the rituals as well as recording their illustrations for posterity, echoing the words of Stella Kremrisch, to quote, "Nothing that is seen on the temple is left unsaid in the verbal tradition," unquote. In the older texts, these are not listed separately, but appear scattered throughout as parts of the details of various stages of construction. The Aparajita Prutcha of 12th century has compiled these separately into 7 pratishthas, installations, and 14 shantikarni, propitiatory rites. Now, a few panels of the Ambarnath Shiva temple, circa 1060 AD, near Kalyan, actually near Bombay, may represent some of these rituals, a feature rarely, if at all, seen in other temples. The texts quoted in this article, which is on the website, are the Samarangana Sutradhara, Aparajita Prutcha, and Ishana Shiva Guru Deva Padvati, which met the period, region, and religious affiliation of the Ambarnath temple. 3 panels on the outside wall may be portraits of a Yajamana, the patron, Acharya, the preceptor priest, and Sutradhara, the master architect. She has given photographs of these in her paper, which is on the website. On the north lintel of the Ambarnath Shiva temple is a small sculptured panel which has not been noticed by previous scholars. It could be depiction of the 6th of the 7 installation rituals, namely Kalasha Ropana, placing the rounded pinnacle at the top of a temple. Several small panels on central pillar could represent the following, and these are the 6 rites which she has mentioned. 1. Search for an auspicious time to take the first step by referring to an astrological calendar. 2. A discourse on the Vastu Purusha Mandala diagram. 3. Artisans at work. 4. Guru Puja. 5. Sutradhara Puja Vidhi, completed by transfer of the merit for the construction by the Sutradhara to the patron king. And 6. Installation of Prasada Purusha. Now I find this paper quite important as it reveals these puja rites as described in the Vastu text depicted in temple sculptural panels. And I have not myself come across any other temple where such depictions based on Vastu rituals are seen. If you have, I'll be happy to know, and I will tell Dr. Kanekar.
Thank you all for your patience for sitting.